We assume she's seeking comfort and counseling in the Holy Text. He is the expert on such things.
Comfort, possibly. But I could hear the doubt in Regan's voice. Bryn downed the rest of his cider.
You're sure she was abducted?
He asked again. His tone was laced with despair. I knew how much he loved his sister, and the thought of her in barbarian hands brought him heartbreaking misery. Yes, I whispered.
We'll confront both mother and father,
Regan said.
We'll make them listen. We'll get her back.
They left, and my spirits lifted. Regan's resolve gave me a sliver of hope at last. He reminded me so much of his brother. If only Walther were here to stand with them, too. I kissed my fingers and prayed for Walther's swift return. I pushed up from the table to go back to our room. I could see the weariness in Gwyneth's face, too, as she rose. It had been a long day of waiting and anticipation.
Well, there you are!
Gwyneth and I both whirled around. Bertie stood in the doorway, her hands on her hips.
Blazing balls! I've been to half the inns from here to the lowlands looking for you two. I didn't think you'd be snug up in the middle of town.
I stared at her, not quite believing what I was seeing. Gwyneth found her tongue before I did. What are you doing here?
I couldn't season a pot of stew to save my life worrying about you two and what happened to Leah. Figured I'd be more useful here.
But who's watching the tavern? I squeaked. Bertie shook her head.
You don't want to know.
She wiped her hands on her dress, as if she were wearing an apron, then sniffed the air.
Not much in the way of cooking here either, I see. I may have to poke my head in the kitchen.
She looked back at us and raised her brows.
Don't I get any kind of welcome?
Gwyneth and I both rushed into her widespread arms, and Bertie swiped at tears she blamed on the dusty ride. The only thing missing in that moment was Leah.
I hold her back. Be still, child. Let them take it. She trembles at my side, fierce with rage. We watch the scavengers take the baskets of food we have gathered. There is no compassion, no mercy. Tonight we will go hungry. I see Herrick, their leader, among them. He eyes Morrigan, and I shove her behind me. Silver knives glitter at his side, and I am grateful that when they leave, he does not take more. The Last Testaments of Gaudrell. Chapter 42.
Calantha escorted me to the bath chamber. While my door was no longer locked as if I were a prisoner, my new freedoms apparently still required guards posted at the end of my hall as a precaution, the Komazar claimed, and I had no doubt they reported back to him every single time I so much as poked my head out the door. I also had escorts, who were essentially guards too, everywhere I went. Last night, when Calantha walked me back to my room, she hadn't spoken a word. This morning seemed to bring more of the same treatment. We entered the dreary, windowless bathchamber, lit only with a few candles, but this time, instead of a wooden barrel, there was a large copper tub. It was half full of water, and waves of steam shimmered over the surface. A hot bath! I hadn't thought such a thing existed here. The sweet scent of roses filled the air. And bath oils! She must have noticed my steps falter. A betrothal gift from the clan, she explained flatly, and she sat on a stool, waving me toward the tub. I disrobed and eased into the scalding water. It was the first hot bath I'd had since leaving the vagabond camp. I could almost have forgotten where I was if not for Calantha's bobbled blue eye staring at me and the Milky One gazing unfocused into the shadows. "Which clan do you belong to?" I asked. That got her attention. Both eyes were focused on me now.
"None," she answered. "I've never lived outside of the Sanctum."
This revelation puzzled me.
"Then why did you have me braid my hair to show off the kava?"
She shrugged. I sank down into the tub.
"That's how you solve all your problems, isn't it? With indifference."
"I have no problems, princess."
"I am your problem, that much is certain. But even that's a mystery to me. You both prod me and thwart me as if you can't make up your mind."
"I do neither. I follow orders."
"I think not," I countered, and ran a soapy sponge down my leg. "I think you're dabbling with a bit of power, but you're not quite sure what to do with it. You test your strength now and then, bring it out of hiding, but then you shove it away again. All your boldness is on the outside. Inside, you cower."
"I think you can bathe by yourself."
She stood to leave. I took a handful of water and threw it at her, splashing her face. She bristled, and her hand flew to the dagger at her hip. Her chest rose in deep, angry breaths.
"I'm armed. That doesn't worry you?"
"I'm naked and unarmed. I'd be a fool not to worry. But I did it anyway, didn't I?"
Her eye blazed. There was no indifference in her face now. Her lip lifted in a condescending sneer.
"I was like you once, princess. Answers were simple. The world was at my fingertips. I was young and in love and the daughter of the most powerful man in the land."
"But the most powerful man in..."
"That's right. I was the daughter of the last Komazar."
I leaned forward in the tub.
"The one who..." "Yes, the one your betrothed killed 11 years ago. I helped him do it."
"So now you know. I am quite capable of being bold. Arranging someone's death is not so difficult."
She turned and left, and the heavy door rattled shut behind her. I sat there, stunned, not quite sure what to think. Had she just threatened to orchestrate my death? I was young and in love. With the Komazar? What did she think when she found out about our marriage? Was that why she had been so silent? Surely she had more reason now to kill me. I finished my bath, the luxury of it now gone. I rubbed the sponge over my arms, trying to think only of the baths where Pauline scrubbed my back and I scrubbed hers, how we poured pitchers of warm rose water over each other, the baths where we laughed and talked about love and the future and all the things that friends share. Not murder. I couldn't quite absorb it. Calantha had helped the Komazar kill her own father. And yet she hadn't drawn her dagger on me, even though I saw the rage in her eye. I had pushed her just as I intended, but didn't get the answer I expected. Still, much was revealed. In the heartbeat of a second, beneath all the scorn that masked her face, I saw a girl, a younger Calantha, one without an eye patch, who was terrified. A small glimpse of truth. She is afraid. Fear and Thanis were two things that seemed to grow easily in this kingdom. When I came out of the bath chamber, Calantha had left two scrawny, smooth-cheeked guards as my escorts in her stead. Apparently she'd had enough of me for one day. I'd had enough of her, too. I started to turn one direction, and both guards stepped forward to block me. "I don't require your escort," I said. "I'm going to..." "We were told to return you to your room," one of them said. His voice was uneven, and he shifted from foot to foot. The two of them exchanged a wary glance, and I saw a knot of leather at the shorter one's neck peeking from beneath his vest. He wore an amulet for protection. No doubt the other guard did, too. I nodded slowly, noting their cautious expressions, and we began walking in the direction they indicated, one on either side of me. When we reached the darkest part of the hallway, I stopped short. I closed my eyes, my hands splayed on my thighs.
"What's wrong with her?"
one whispered.
"Step back," the other said.
I grimaced. I heard them both scramble back. I fluttered my eyelids open until my eyes were wide and crazed-looking. Both guards were plastered up against the wall. I slowly opened my mouth, wider and wider, until I was sure I looked like a gaping cod. And then I let loose a blood-curdling scream. They both ran down the hallway, disappearing so quickly into the shadows I was impressed with their agility. I turned, satisfied they wouldn't be coming this way again, and went in the opposite direction. It was the first time I had twisted the gift into a sham since I'd been here, but if I wasn't going to be handed my newly earned freedoms, it appeared I would have to seize them. There were secrets just steps away that I had a right to know. The caverns deep below the sanctum were quiet. Only a little borrowed light from a lantern in the outside corridor helped me navigate. I entered a long, narrow chamber that had clearly been in recent use. A half-eaten loaf of bread was wrapped in waxed cloth. Books lay open on a table. Numbers and symbols that made no sense to me were scribbled on sheets of paper and gave no clue as to where the strange robed men were from. Several tiny sealed flasks filled with clear liquid lined the back of another table. I lifted one and held it to the light. Their own stock of spirits? I replaced it and searched the dim corners but could find nothing. This chamber hadn't been my intended destination, but as I'd passed its narrow portal, a chill suddenly overtook me. There. My flesh crawled. The word pressed heavy against my chest like a hand stopping me. There. I was certain it was the gift speaking, an air current within the room that reached out to me. But when I could find nothing, I doubted myself, wondering if it was only one of the drafts in this cavernous underworld. I took one last long look at the contents of the room and moved on. Aster had been right. This tunnel led only to wet rock and gears, the hidden workings of the bridge. The river roared just steps away from me, and I was already wet from its mist. Its power was staggering and frightening, and I wondered how many lives had been lost just trying to construct a way across it. My spirits sank when I examined the gears. They were part of an elaborate pulley system, with wheels as massive as the one I had seen higher up the cliff at the entrance to Venda. "There's no way," I said to myself. And yet, I couldn't quite bring myself to walk away. The lowest gear was secured into the surrounding rock. It was a slippery ascent, and the churning river below made me check and double-check every foothold, but my short climb revealed nothing of help. If anything, it only confirmed that we wouldn't be leaving by the bridge.
Chapter 43.
She didn't use the word love. My Aunt Cloris called it a confluence of destinies. I thought it was a beautiful word when she said it, confluence, and I was certain it had to mean something beautiful and sweet, like a powdered pastry. She said the King of Morrigan was 34, and had still not found a proper match when a noble first daughter of a kingdom under siege had caught a lord's eye on a diplomatic trip to Gastineau. Confluence. A coming together by chance, like meandering brooks that join up in a distant unseen gorge. Together they become something greater, but it isn't delicate or sweet. Like a raging river, a confluence can lead to something impossible to predict or control. My Aunt Cloris deserved more credit for her astuteness than I had given her. Yet sometimes the coming together, the confluence of destinies, seemed not to be by chance at all. Today the Komazar had matters that needed his attention in the Tomac quarter, but he'd learned from Calantha that Rafe's family had bred horses that supplied the Dalbrek army. He asked Eben and Governor Janos to take Rafe to the eastern paddock and stables just outside the city to assess some of his studs and mares. I had insisted on exercising some of my newly earned freedoms, even if it came with the escort of 2 well-armed guards, and I went to the Capswam quarter to seek out Yvette's Bapa. I gave him half the winnings from my card game with Malik, and asked 3 things of him. That he seek out a healer for Yvette to make sure her hand didn't blacken with infection, to use the remaining coins to buy the cheese she had so dearly paid for already, and to never shame her for the heinous deeds of another. He tried to refuse the money, but I made him take it. And then he cried, and I thought my heart would wrench from my chest. The guards, 2 young men who were no more than 20, witnessed the exchange, and after we left I warned them not to tell Malik where his winnings had gone.
"We're Murasi," one of them said. "Yvette is our cousin."
And though they extended me no promises, I knew they wouldn't tell. It was midday, and I had just entered the stable yard from the south sanctum gate, and Rafe from the western gate. My heart lifted as it always did when I saw him, for a brief moment forgetting about the danger he faced and the lies I had to guard. I only saw the scruff of his unshaven face, his hair tied back, the confidence of his posture in the saddle, the same sureness as when he had walked into the tavern the first time. There was an engaging power about him, and I wondered how no one else saw it. He wasn't a conniving lackey to a prince. He was the prince. Maybe we all see what we want to see. I had fallen in love with the idea of a farmer, and it hadn't taken much nudging for me to believe it was so. He was eating an apple, and its red skin shone bright against the drab stable yard. I had seen the treasured fruit arrive this morning with a Pervisi caravan, and watched Calantha throw him 2 of the sweet prizes. I hadn't had any fruit since I left the vagabond camp. The closest thing to it here was the root vegetables, carrots and turnips, sometimes served with the sanctum chickens or wild game. I knew an apple was another reserved luxury delivered to the council quarters, and I wondered at Calantha's generosity with Rafe. He swayed easily in his saddle as he approached, biting off another chunk of apple, and our paths met in the middle of the yard. We exchanged a quick glance and dismounted, waiting for teams of horses that were being hitched to wagons to move out of the way. Even though we had an idle moment together, and the guards surrounding us were loud with jesting, telling the Pervisi drivers to hurry up about their work, there were still too many within earshot. I couldn't take a chance trying to explain last night and how my refusing the Komazar might hasten Rafe's death sentence. He was left to wonder what I was up to. He knew I despised the Komazar. He chewed his apple, his eyes inspecting my dress and the long trails of bones that rattled at my side. I could see every syllable in his eyes. She's becoming more Venden every day.
"If my friend Jeb were here," he said, "he'd commend your accessories, Princess. His tastes run on the savage side."
"As do the Komazars,"
A guard interjected, a reminder that they were always listening. I studied Wraith. I wasn't sure if it was a compliment or an insult. His tone was odd, but then something else caught his attention. I followed his gaze. A confluence of destinies. Not now. Not here. I knew it couldn't go well. It was Caden. He was riding toward us with the governor he had sought at his side, and what looked like a disheveled squad of men with him. Rafe began choking, apple flying from his mouth. His eyes watered. "Chew, emissary," I said, "before swallowing." He coughed a few more times, but his eyes remained fixed on the approaching squad. I saw the visible relief on Caden's face when he spotted me. He swung down from his horse, and the men with him did the same. Caden ignored Rafe as if he weren't there. In fact, as if no one were there. "You're well?" he asked, not noticing the sudden hush of the soldiers around us. The assassin was back. The assassin who had not yet heard the news. The governor stepped up, clearing his throat. Caden grudgingly nodded toward him. "This is the new governor of Arleston and his..." He paused, as if searching for the right word. "Soldiers." I understood why it gave him pause. Soldiers was a generous term. They were not an impressive lot. No uniforms, their clothes ragged, the poorest of the poor. But the governor was a frightening brute of a man, tall and lean, with a broad chest and a vicious scar that striped his face from cheekbone to chin. He had a scowling line between his brows to match.
"And you are?" he said.
The sudden forced smile twisting his lips was more wretched than his scowl. "It's not important," Caden said. "Let's go..."
"Princess Arabella," I answered. "First daughter of Morrigan. And this is Rafe, the emissary of Prince Jackson of Dalbrek."
The governor's smile disappeared.
"Enemy swine in the sanctum?" he said in disbelief.
He glared at Rafe and spit, hitting Rafe's boots. Rafe started forward, but I stepped between them. "For someone so new to this position, you have an exceptionally reckless tongue, Governor," I said. "Be careful, or you may lose it." He sputtered with astonishment and looked at Caden.
"You allow your prisoners to speak to you this way?"
"She's not a prisoner anymore,"
one of the nearby soldiers chided. And that's when Rafe told Caden about my new role at the Sanctum.
Chapter 44. Caden.
I threw open the door to the Komazar's meeting chamber, sending it crashing against the wall. Three brethren standing near him drew their weapons. The Komazar remained seated behind a table piled with maps and charts, and our gazes locked. My chest heaved from my flight through the stable yard and the sanctum. My Ratan brethren kept their daggers gripped in their fists. "Leave," the Komazar ordered. They rightfully hesitated.
"Leave!"
he yelled again. They reluctantly sheathed their knives. When they closed the door behind them, he stood and walked around to the side of the table and faced me.
"So you've heard the news? I'll assume you're here to offer your congratulations."
I lunged. I knocked him to the floor, and furniture toppled around us. He pulled my knife from its sheath, but I slammed his hand against the floor, and the knife flew across the room. His other fist caught my jaw, and I fell back, but my knee met his ribs when he came at me again. Glass shattered, papers and maps rained down around us, but my rage finally prevailed, and I pinned him down, holding a shard of his broken lantern to his neck. Blood seeped from my hand as the sharp edge cut into my own flesh.
You knew! You knew how I felt about her, but everything you already had wasn't enough! You had to have her, too! As soon as I turned my back!
Then what are you waiting for?
His eyes were fiercely cold.
Slash my throat. Be done with it.
The glass shook in my fist. One slash, and I'd be the next Komazar. It had been expected for years, one assassin after another rising to power. We sealed our own fates, training our successors far too well in their duties. My hand bled across his neck. His eyes didn't waver.
That's right, he said. Think carefully. You always do. That's one thing I've always been able to count on with you. Think about all our years together. Where you were when I found you. Think of all the things we've worked for, all the things you still want. Is a girl really worth it?
And yet you marry her? Make her queen? She must be worth it to you. What happened to all your talk of flabby domestic lives and royals? Venda doesn't have royals!
Your anger clouds your judgment. Is that what she's done to you? Poisoned you? My decisions are based solely on what will benefit my countrymen. Where do yours come from?
Only Leah. For me, Venda hadn't existed as I flew into this room. He looked at me calmly, even with jagged glass at his throat.
I could have had you killed the minute you burst through my door. That's not what I want, Caden. We have too much history between us. Let's talk.
I glared at him, my lungs burning, heated seconds ticking by, the pulse of his neck steady beneath my hand. Only one small vein separated me from Leah. But it was true. He could have set the rattan upon me the second I walked through the door. Even as I came through the gates, he could have been ready with his own dagger.
We have too much history between us.
I let him up. He threw me a rag to wrap my hand. He surveyed the broken carnage of his study and shook his head.
You're the one who brought her here. You're the one who said she'd be useful to Venda. You were right. And now the clans have welcomed her. To them, she's a sign that the gods have favored Venda. She's a symbol of old ways and promises. We got more than we bargained for, and now we must use it. We have a long winter ahead of us, and most supplies must go to feed our army. But the fervor of the masses won't waver if she feeds their superstitions.
Why a marriage? I said bitterly. There are other ways.
It was the clan's request, brother, not mine. Think. Have I shown any interest in her before now? The clans welcomed her, but some were wary, thinking it could be another trick of the enemy. They wanted evidence of a true commitment on her part. Marriage to their leader has the permanence they desired. I consulted with the council. They approved it. You question not just my judgment, but that of the entire council?
I didn't know what to think. I couldn't believe the council would approve this, but without me here, why not? Malik was probably the first to call a yea, and from the day the Murasi welcomed her, I should have known this could become a possibility. The Murasi did not welcome outsiders.
Don't worry. Things won't change much. I have no interest in the girl beyond what she'll do for our countrymen. You can even keep your pet in your quarters for now, if you're discreet around the clans. They must think the marriage is real.
He paused as he righted the footed oil lamp.
But I must warn you, he said, turning back to me. She's developed a genuine kinship with the clans. When I proposed the marriage, she embraced it. She was eager, even. She saw its worth, too.
Embraced? Under threat of her death? I said sarcastically.
Ask her yourself. She saw that it afforded her two advantages, greater freedoms and sweet revenge against her father. Certainly you, of all people, can understand that. Betrayal by one's own kind is a wound that never heals. Use your logic, you smitten ass, and pull yourself together.
I looked at him. My calm returned. I'll be asking her. You can be sure of that. He paused as if something had just occurred to him.
Devil's hell, she's not bearing your brat, is she? I hope you're not that stupid.
He assumed, as I had led him to believe, that Leah and I were sleeping together. But the Ratan were expected to take precautions so as not to be saddled with those flabby domestic lives he so greatly scorned.
No, there is no brat.
I spun and stormed out.
Caden, he called as I reached the door. Don't push me too far. Malik would make a fine assassin, too.
She leaned over the basin, splashing her face, her shoulders stiffening at the sound of my footsteps behind her. Did he force your hand? I asked. I know he did. I don't even know why I'm asking. She didn't answer, and dipped her hands in the water, washing up to her elbows. I grabbed her arm, spinning her around, and the basin tipped over. It split in two when it hit the floor.
Answer me!
I yelled. She looked down at the broken halves and the water pooling at our feet. I thought you already had the answer to your question and didn't require mine.
Tell me, Leah.
Her eyes glistened. Caden, I'm sorry. I'm not going to lie and say I don't want this. I do. You know I don't love the Komazar, but I'm not a foolish, dreamy-eyed girl anymore either. The truth is, I've become resigned to the fact that I'm never getting out of here. I need to make a life for myself, the best one I can, just as you asked me to. And if we're going to be honest... Her voice wobbled, and she swallowed. The Komazar has something to offer that you don't. Power. There are people here, like Aster, the clans, and others, that I'm actually coming to care about. I want to help them. With a little power, I might. I remember you telling me that you didn't have the choices I thought you did. I understand that now. So, like you, I'm taking advantage of the choices I do have. Marriage to the Komazar offers benefits that you can't give me. Her eyes narrowed. And, as an added bonus, the news of the marriage will cut at least my father to the core, if not all of Morrigan. There's some sweetness to that. Believe me when I tell you that my hand was not forced.
In just a week's time, you decided all that? The glisten in her eyes receded as if on cue. A week is a lifetime, Caden. It can wipe a whole world of people from the face of the earth with the falling of a single star. It can transport a tavern maid living in a seaside village to a scorching desert with ruthless cutthroats as her companions. So in comparison, really, does my small decision to marry a man for his power require more than a week's thought? I shook my head. That's not you, Leah. Her lip lifted in disgust, as if she had suddenly grown weary of being sympathetic. You're hurt, Caden. I'm sorry, truly. But life is hard. Pull your Venden head out of your ass and get used to it. Didn't you spit out very similar words to me back in Rena's Carvacci? Well, I get it now. So should you. Her voice was cold, detached, and what she said was true. Everything sank inside me, falling like she had cut both my breath and muscle loose. I looked at her. Even the words on my tongue lost somewhere in the tumble, and I turned away. I walked back out the door, down the hall, not seeing anything as I went, wondering how she'd become so perfectly royal.
Chapter 45. Rafe.
I leaned against the parapet watching Leah. I was alone without benefit of guard, Ulrichs, or Calantha. Though they let me know often that they were keeping a close watch on me, they were no longer constantly at my side. It seemed all the rules had been relaxed now that the marriage was announced, and now that I rested my head against my arms, my mother was dead. It sickened me that her death gained me more credibility. I should be home. Everyone in Dalbrek was probably searching and wondering, where is Prince Jackson? Why isn't he here? Why has he shirked his duties? Yes, my father would have Sven's head and mine if we ever got back. That is, if my father was still alive. Those are the toughest ones to kill. My father was a tough bastard, just as the Commissar had said, but an old one, tiring, and he loved my mother, loved her more than his kingdom or his own life. Losing her would weaken him, make him quick prey to scourges he had fought off in better times. I should be there. I was back to that again. I lifted my head and looked at Leah sitting on the far wall above the square below. My duty was in Dalbrek, but I couldn't imagine myself anywhere but here with her. There were only small gatherings when I left. I turned. Caden had come upon me silently. He was hidden in the shadow of a column, watching her too. His was the last company I wanted. The numbers have doubled every night, I said. They love her. They don't even know her. Just what the Commissar parades through the streets. He turned to look at me, his eyes filled with contempt. Maybe you're the one who doesn't know her. I looked back at Leah, perched precariously on a high wall. I didn't like anything about it. I didn't want to share her with Venda. I didn't want anything about this miserable land to love her. It was like claws digging in and pulling her into their dark den. But day by day, I saw it. I saw it in the way the bones swung from her hip as she walked, the way she wore their clothes, the way she spoke to them. For her, they were no longer the same enemy they had been when we had first walked over that bridge. It's not just the remembrances or the stories, I said. They ask her questions. She tells them about the world past the great river, a world she'll never see again if she marries your Komazar. She's embraced it. She told me. I snorted. Then it must be so. We both know Leah always tells the truth. He looked at me, his eyes dead still, rolling the thought in his head as if he was shuffling through his memory for her past lies. I noticed the bruise on his jaw and his bandaged hand. Those were good signs. Dissension in the ranks. Maybe the Komazar would kill him before I did. I lifted my gaze, and so did Caden. We saw them at the same time. Across the way on the high terraces, governors and guards had come out to observe Leah. And over at the North Tower, framed in his window, the Komazar himself watched over it all. He was too far away for us to see his expression, but I saw it in his stance, the ownership, the pride, the strings he surely thought he pulled on his pretty little puppet. Her words swept through the square, then echoed back from the walls, ringing clear, and a strange stillness crawled across the air. It was all eerily quiet, except for her. "It's how it was in the valley when she buried her brother," Caden said. "It stopped every soldier. For the kingdoms rose out of the ashes of men and women, and are built on the bones of the lost. And thereunto we shall return if heaven wills, and so shall it be forevermore." Evermore. The final word ate through me, the looming permanence if I didn't get her out of here soon. I watched Caden studying her. "But he'll be kind to her, right?" I said. "The wedding will be a day for both of us to celebrate. We can wash our hands of her at last. A lot of trouble, isn't she?" I watched his jaw tighten, the imperceptible flinch of his shoulder. He wanted to jump me for throwing the truth in his face. I almost wished he would. I'd like to have it done with him once and for all. But I had bigger worries to puzzle out, and little time to do it. The wedding had shortened my deadline by a week, and now the others were here. I turned to leave. "You walk freely through the sanctum now, emissary?" "A lot has changed in a week, assassin. For both of us. Welcome home."
Chapter 46.
I had been here for such a short time, but it already felt like a lifetime. Every hour was wrung with fear, and I had to hold back from what I wanted to do more than anything else. The task seemed rightfully mine, as much as love had seemed mine to find all those months ago when I ran from Civica. My destiny now seemed as clear as words on paper. Until one comes who is mightier. A few words with so much promise. Or maybe only a few words of madness. I took another ribbon from the basket and tied it to a crossbar on the overhead lantern. I had lowered it with the rope so it was within reach, hoping to occupy my mind with something else for a few blessed minutes. Something that took me to a world outside of the sanctum. But my thoughts kept going back to one thing. It's harder to kill a man than a horse. Was it? I didn't know. But there were hundreds of ways, and they all burned within me. A heavy pot swung into the skull. A 3-inch knife plunged into the windpipe. A push from a high wall. Every time I passed an opportunity by, the fire blazed hotter. But the desire burned side by side with a different searing need to save someone I loved when I had let another down so miserably. If I killed the Komazar, there would be a bloodbath. I had nothing to offer the governors, Ratan, or Chievdars. No alliances,
not even a cask of wine to make it worth keeping me alive. My only certain ally on the council was Caden, and he alone couldn't erase the target I would inherit on my back. For now, I didn't just want to stay alive for Wraith, I needed to stay alive for him. This marriage might not free him, but at least it wouldn't cut his life short. I would always have that to hold over the Komazar. The fervor would end if he harmed Wraith. A marriage bought us both more time. That was all. There were no guarantees beyond that. I remembered my conversation with Birdie after Greta had been murdered. Not caring about guarantees, and thinking I'd marry the devil himself if it offered the slimmest chance to save Greta and the baby. Now it seemed that was just who I would be marrying. I leaned on my window ledge, looking up at the heavens. The gods had a wicked sense of humor. I tied the last ribbon and pulled the rope to lift the chandelier again. A rainbow of color fluttered overhead, and I wondered what Caden would think when he saw it. Guilt stabbed at me for deceiving him. He'd already been wronged so completely and fully by nobility like me. Loyalty meant everything to him. I understood that now. What else could one expect from a boy who'd been thrown out by his own father like a piece of trash? I sighed and shook my head. A Moragis lord. Now, just like his father, I had betrayed Caden too. On many levels. I knew how he felt about me, and strangely, I cared for him, even when I was angered by his loyalty to the Komazar. There was a connection between us that I didn't quite understand. It wasn't the same feeling I had for Wraith, but I knew that with our last kiss, I had led Caden to believe there was more. There are no rules when it comes to survival, I reminded myself. But I wished there were. The betrayal seemed never to end. Soon the Komazar would ask me to betray those who had welcomed me, to roll my eyes and fill them with the hope he had conjured, and I was sure it would serve him more than the people. You will hold your tongue and speak the words I give to you. I sat on my bed and closed my eyes, blocked out the whickering and stamp of horses far below my window, the clank of gates being closed, the screams of the cook chasing after another loose chicken that wished to keep its head. Instead, I was in a meadow with ribbons blowing from trees, mountains above me tinged purple, rose oil being rubbed into my back, breathing in the sweet scent 1,000 miles from here. This world, it breathes you in, shares you. Please share me with Wraith. I do this for you, only for you. There was a sudden sharp knock at my door. Caden had left with such disgust painted across his face, I knew he wouldn't be back so soon, if ever. Was it Ulrich's with another order from the Komazar? What would it be tonight? Wear the green, the brown, whatever I command. An ugly flash of the Moragis court shot through me. A different setting, but years of the same orders. Wear that, be quiet, sign here, go to your chamber, hold your tongue. For the gods' sakes, Princess Arabella, your opinion isn't required. We don't want to hear your voice on this matter again. I grabbed the flask on the chest and hurled it across the room. Pieces of pottery rained to the floor, and I trembled with the truth. One kingdom wasn't much different from another. Another knock. This one soft and uncertain. I wiped my eyes and went to the door. Aster's eyes were wide.
You all right in here, miss? 'Cause I can scoot this fetcher away and come back another time,
but Calantha told me to bring him and his cart here, and it's mighty loaded. But that don't mean you have to be letting him in your room right now, because you're looking plenty warm with your cheeks all flushed and... Aster, who are you talking about? She moved aside, and a young man stepped timidly into view. He slipped his hat from his head and clutched it to his stomach.
I'm here to leave fuel for the hearth.
I looked back over my shoulder at the bin near the fireplace. I still have wood and patties. I don't need...
The weather's turning colder, and I got my orders, he said. The Commissar says you'll need more.
The Commissar concerned about my warmth? Not likely. I looked at him, a rumpled patty clapper, but something about him didn't seem quite right. The pale brown of his eyes was a bit too sharp. An unbridled energy simmered in them, and even though his clothes were filthy and his face unshaven, his teeth were even and white.
Calantha told me to come right back, miss, Aster said. Can I leave this fetcher here with you?
Yes, that's fine, Aster. Go along. She ran off, and I stepped aside, waving the young man to the bin by the hearth. He rolled his cart into the room, but stopped in the middle and turned to face me. He looked at me curiously, then bowed deeply.
Your Highness.
I frowned. Are you mocking me? He shook his head.
You might want to close the door.
My mouth fell open. He spoke these last words in Morrigese and had switched tongues without missing a beat. The majority of Vendans outside of the sanctum didn't speak the language, and those within, the council and some of the servants and guards, spoke it with a heavy, broken tongue if they spoke it at all.
You speak Morrigese, I said.
We call it Dalbrech, where I'm from, but yes, our kingdom's languages are almost identical.
The door?
I sucked in a shocked breath, quickly slamming the door, and whirled back to him. Tears sprang to my eyes. Rafe's friends weren't dead. He dropped to one knee and took my hand, kissing it.
Your Highness, he said again, this time with greater emphasis. We're here to take you home.
We sat on my bed and talked for as long as we dared. His name was Jeb. He told me the journey into Venda had been a tricky one, but they had been in the city for a few days now. They were working out preparations. He asked me questions regarding the council wing and the layout of the sanctum. I told him every hall and path I knew of, especially those least traveled, and the tunnels in the caverns below. I told him who the most bloodthirsty Vendans of the council were, and about those who might be helpful, like Aster, but that we couldn't do anything that might put her at risk. I also mentioned Grizz and how he had covered for Wraith, but I suspected it was only as a payback to me for saving his life.
You saved his life?
I warned him about a bison stampede. I saw the question in his eyes. I can't control or summon it, Jeb. It's a gift. Something passed down through the surviving ancients, that's all. Sometimes I don't even trust it myself, but I'm learning to. He nodded.
I'll nose around and see if I can figure anything out about this Grizz fellow.
The others, I asked. Where are they? He hesitated.
Hidden in the city. You won't see them until it's time. Either Rafe or I will give you warning.
And there are four of you? I tried my best to sound optimistic, but the number said aloud had a gravity of its own and spoke for itself.
Yes, he said simply,
and moved on as if the odds were a gulf that they would somehow navigate. He wasn't sure exactly when they'd be ready to move, but they hoped details would be worked out soon.
They were still investigating the best way to accomplish their task, and there were a few supplies they were having difficulty acquiring. "The Jehendra in the Capswam Quarter has just about every kind of shop there is," I said.
"I know, but we have no Venden money, and it's far too busy there to steal anything."
I leaned over and felt for the leather pouch under my bed. It jingled as I placed it in Jeb's hands. "Winnings from a card game," I explained. "It should buy just about anything you might want. If you need more, I can get it." Nothing could have given me greater satisfaction than knowing Malik might play a role in our escape. Jeb felt the weight of the pouch and assured me it would be more than enough. He said he'd remember never to play me in a game of cards. From there, he spoke in gentle positives the way a well-trained soldier would, saying they would be acting as quickly as they possibly could. A soldier named Tavish was the coordinator of all details, and he would give the signal when everything was ready. Jeb downplayed the dangers, but the words he avoided rippled beneath the surface, the risk and possibility that we might not all get out. He was young, only Rafe's age, a soldier not unlike any of my brothers. Beneath the ragged clothes and dirt, I saw a sweetness. In fact, he reminded me of Bryn, a smile always tugging at the corner of his mouth. Maybe a sister waited at home for him to return. I blinked back tears. "I'm sorry," I said. "I am so very sorry." His brow creased with alarm.
"You have nothing to be sorry for, Your Highness."
"You wouldn't be here if it weren't for me." He placed both his hands gently on my shoulders.
"You were abducted by a hostile nation, and my prince called me to duty. He's not a man prone to folly. I would do anything he asked, and I see his judgment was true. You're everything he said you were."
His expression turned solemn.
I'd never seen him so driven as when we raced across the Camlanteau. "You need to know, Princess, he didn't mean to deceive you. It tore at him."
It was those words that undid me, in front of Jeb of all people, a near-perfect stranger, and I finally broke down. I fell into his shoulder, forgetting that I should be embarrassed, and sobbed. He held me, patted my back, and whispered, "It's all right." I finally pushed away and wiped my eyes. I looked at him, expecting to see his own embarrassment, but instead I only saw concern in his eyes. "You have a sister, don't you?" I asked.
"Three," he answered.
I could tell. Maybe that's why I shook my head. "I don't want you to think I do this a lot."
"Cry? Or get abducted?"
I smiled. "Both." I reached out and squeezed his hand. "You have to promise me something. When the time comes, watch Rafe's back before mine. Make sure he gets out, and your fellow soldiers. Because I couldn't bear it if..." He put his finger to his lips.
"Shh. We'll all watch one another's back. We'll all get out."
He stood.
"If you see me again, pretend not to know me. Paddy clappers are not memorable."
He gathered his cart, tossing a few patties into the hearth box, and flashed me a mischievous smile over his shoulder as he left, glib and cocky, shrugging off the dangers. So much like Bryn. This paddy clapper was one I would never forget.
A terrible greatness rolled across the land. A tempest of dust and fire and reckoning, absolute in its power, devouring man and beast, field and flower, all that dared to be in its path. and the cries of the snared filled the heavens with tears. Morrigan, Book of Holy Text, Volume 2. Chapter 47.
Sanctum Hall was decidedly quieter tonight. I could sense it even from a distance as we walked down.